Welcome to Build with Bitcoin. In this episode, we do a deep dive into the Liquid Network from Blockstream. We get into some of the use cases, the regulatory environment, the mechanics on how it works, as well as some of the paradigm shifts that are represented by smart contracts being built on top of the Bitcoin technology stack. Adolfo Contreras, who is Senior Business Development Advisor at Blockstream for the Liquid product, explains how capital markets are being completely reshaped by what Liquid offers. We hope you enjoy the content. If you do, please remember to like, follow, share, give us your feedback, as this all helps us greatly. As a reminder, this podcast is for educational purposes only. Build with Bitcoin is a proud affiliate partner of River. If you would like a seamless start to your Bitcoin-only financial services, use our exclusive link below at partner.river.com/buildwithbitcoin.
Welcome to Build with Bitcoin. I'm co-host Israel Munoz and joined with Lynn. Today we have the pleasure of welcoming Adolfo from Blockstream. We're very much looking forward to today's deep dive on the Liquid Network. So welcome, Adolfo.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, Adolfo, we're really looking forward to this conversation because it's a little bit of an extension of a conversation that we had recently with Arnaud from Stalker, and the whole concept of remaking capital markets based on Bitcoin and what it provides, and especially with Liquid. And so you were recommended to us as being the person to speak to about this because of the writing that you've done on Liquid, in particular related to the capital markets, and your association with Blockstream, which Stalker has been issuing the Blockstream mining note. So we're really excited to have this conversation. It's a little bit different, but we can't wait to take a deep dive into Liquid and your thoughts on how Bitcoin and Liquid can completely re-envision what capital markets are globally.
That's good. So, yeah, I've always liked being up to date with regards to technology advancements and progress. And so I was always reading these technology blogs back in the day, like 2011, something like that, when I first read about Bitcoin. And, you know, I totally ignored it for the 6 years later. But I remember that at that time, I thought, well, who would need some cyber money? And I thought it was a ridiculous idea and just part of the bucket of all crazy ideas that I was listening to at that time. Then a couple of years later, I remember that during the bull run of 2013, Bitcoin reached something like $1,000. And I remember I started paying attention back again. But then I read an article from an economist, a Spanish economist, and who's, you know, opinions I respected at the day. I don't any longer. And I thought that he made a very good point on why money needed some network effects in order to work. You know, and I thought that Bitcoin didn't have them and that therefore its chances of success were very slim. And but then I remember that I was on Twitter a lot at that day, on those dates, and I remember that I was reading people whose opinion I respected and admired, and they kept speaking about Bitcoin like in 2016, something like that. And I remember that I was thinking, but this thing hasn't died yet, you know, and why do these people keep talking about this? And then that's when I totally deep dived. I started paying attention. I remember I didn't buy anything for quite some time because I'm a follower of Warren Buffett's philosophy of not investing on anything you don't understand, right? And that was it. You know, I didn't understand anything yet, and I was just paying attention, and I didn't buy until quite a long time later. But then, I spent some time doing many things, and I ended up at Blockstream like 2 years and a half ago. And my role here is business development, but with a focus on Liquid. You know, Liquid is basically a market enables capital markets, and therefore it needs, you know, to grow from both on the issuance side, but also on the investor side, right? And also understanding what's the status of the market, many things in order to bootstrap it. You know, also with the way the crypto market works, some incentives are kind of perverse, you know, and therefore you need to focus where this technology really solves problems. And so that's how I deep dive in all this and how I got here.
And for context of the listeners, so things like the Liquid Network, which is a layer two solution, are necessary for the scalability side of getting, you know, Bitcoin's throughput to scale and other functionality, right? Such as smart contract token issuance, like Liquid is enabling. But can you maybe explain briefly, Adolfo, the mechanics of the Liquid network and how that relates to the base layer or layer one of Bitcoin?
Yeah, sure. So we, in Bloxstream, we believe that blockchains have trade-offs. That means that you can't significantly improve, you know, anything without compromising something else. And therefore, since we believe that the security of the token and the main chain are mandatory, you know, it's something we don't want to mess with, we believe that scalability, advanced features should happen on second layers. And that's what Liquid is. Liquid is a sidechain to Bitcoin. And the way it works is that you lock Bitcoin on the main chain and you unlock it on this other sidechain with different protocol rules. It means it can move faster, it can move cheaper, can move with confidentiality, and as you said, can enable all those digital asset issuance and advanced financial applications. Liquid Network is, it doesn't use the proof of work consensus of Bitcoin because it is not as decentralized as Bitcoin. In order to have that kind of features of scalability and cheap transactions and all those others, it requires some level of centralization compared to Bitcoin. But that level of centralization is basically based on the consensus layer. It is actually a federation of companies that govern Liquid. But interestingly, the federation consensus is actually the model that has been most proven. And people don't know this, but in TradFi, if you have experience there, you probably know that national stock exchanges, clearing houses, depositaries, you know, even the central bank is actually a federation of members. You know, they have their own members. They take decisions in order to manage the, you know, where these financial institution they want to go to, you know, and in terms of rules, protocols, et cetera, to make it more secure, whatever. And so basically what Liquid is doing is replacing all those financial institutions, rules and protocols and members and federations into just one. You know, instead of rules and protocols written, are basically software and cryptography. And that's the idea. You know, you can do literally everything I have described within those institutions in just one software network. And that's the let's say, the very high-level idea, but it gets deeper, you know, and so it's very interesting. We can talk about it later, but that's a more or less the general idea.
Yeah, that actually, I want to reference, and we'll include it in the show notes, but a paper that you wrote or an article that you wrote called Scaling Trust. And I'd love for you to just explain a little bit about that, about how this technology actually is replacing or providing the trust that we found in traditional financial systems previously through these consensus organizations that you were just describing.
Sure. Well, that's the part I like the most because it relates to Nick Szabo's work, of whom I'm a great fan, and also to the cypherpunk vision. You know, the cypherpunk vision is basically the idea that cypherpunks wanted to create a realm, you know, with the internet of, you know, economic freedom and economic cooperation. But as we know, trust is a very local phenomenon. You know, we typically don't trust people beyond a very narrow circle of people around us. And the way we interact with strangers is by putting in the middle what Nick Szabo called trust hubs. And those are institutions. Institutions are basically human devised rules and protocols that get in the middle between strangers so that when I interact with one of these institutions and a stranger does interact with that institution as well, then we know we can kind of, you know, trust each other and we can cooperate. And examples of institutions are, for example, money. They are contracts, they are laws, regulations, markets. They are courts. You know, there are many kinds of institutions that get media. There are many kinds of institutions that enable global cooperation. And what I learned is that cypherpunks were basically into the idea of building this kind of institutions in the internet that would enable us to trust each other, you know. And the way this is done is in two ways, you know. The first way is by totally replacing an existing institution, which is what Bitcoin does, in my opinion. And in order to do so, in order to, you know, if you're building a competitor of an institution, you need to make it headless. You know, you need to have nobody in control because otherwise, and trust minimized, because otherwise, if you have elements in the middle you know, it will happen what Nick Szabo called becoming a lawyer magnet. You know, lawyers will go after you. You know, regulators will go after you, politicians, everyone, literally everyone, you know. And institutions that are headless can enforce our rights, you know, in cyberspace. That's the way, that was the vision from cypherpunks. So, but there's a second way. You know, the first one, again, is replacing entirely an existing institution. And I believe most people believe that Bitcoin is sound money. But I actually think that perhaps it may become money if it stabilizes at some point. But I think that the most what is undeniable is that Bitcoin is the institution of private property. I mean by that that you, if you create a random enough secret, you're going to be, owning something that the market values, you know, regardless of any loss. And that is mind blowing to me. You know, with simply some software and the proof of work consensus mechanism, you can enable private property for the first time in history without the need of any laws. You know, and that is mind blowing to me. But the second way, which is what I think most people haven't thought of, is that you can actually extend the reach of existing reputed institutions. And that's what Liquid does, and is actually doing. But let me give you the best example I can think of how a blockchain can do this. Tether. You know, Tether is actually connecting the U.S. Federal Reserve, basically one of the most reputed institutions in the world, with its best product, which is the USD, and it's connecting it with users worldwide, you know? And unfortunately for Liquid, for payments, for small payments, you don't need that much security. So this is actually happening on Tron, which is very disappointing. But if you want to have advanced financial applications, you need to do this on a secure enough blockchain. We can delve into that. But getting back to the idea, it means that with regards to financial markets, you can enable jurisdictions with very lean regulatory bodies, without the need for all these clearinghouses, without the need for that depositories and all that, to enable financial markets that can compete with existing major hubs worldwide, you know, without the need of all those institutions that take many, many years and many decades to evolve. You know, it's actually only happened in Western countries. And the reason is because there needs to be this Western culture of, you know, a tradition of criticizing what is not working and a tradition of correcting what is not working as well. So this only happens in the West. And this is the reason why the West is more advanced than, you know, other countries worldwide. And why these financial markets can work like that. But my opinion goes further. My opinion means that these emerging countries with lean regulatory bodies have the opportunity to leapfrog the developed ones. And the reason is because the developed ones don't, you know, they already have these rails based on laws, regulations, legal enforcement, you know, you name it, which is extremely expensive to set up. But they have a huge business in there. So what are their incentives to move to these new rails, you know? And that's why I've been visiting all these events in TradFi. And the only thing I see is proofs of concept doing the same thing over and over again, you know, like prototypes that don't take off. And it's actually very boring, you know, like issuing a bond from Siemens. I'm sorry if someone's listening to this example, but I think it's very boring because the liquidity, you're not going to find it in a blockchain. You know, the blockchain will be very useful if you have no other way to meet, or let's say to match an issuance with investors, you know, to match the need for money with liquidity, right? And that's what happens in emerging countries mostly. And also in countries that, while they are developed, they lack a particular law, you know, to enable that kind of trust for a particular asset, for example. And that's something that we've seen in Mexico. Mexico is very developed compared to other Latin countries, but it just missed one law for a particular asset, and it took off, you know, and took off on Liquid. So we're basically, the way I see it is that there is an opportunity for emerging countries to keep growing this ecosystem, you know. And over time, my opinion is that only secure enough and trust minimized enough blockchains will be the solution for this problem.
You know, when I researching this episode, it really just blew my mind open, some of your thoughts on this, because even when we talked to Arnab and Stocker, I was thinking of it and remaking capital markets to having buyers outside of the Western countries being able to participate in equities like MicroStrategy or the Bitcoin or Hashrate through the Blockstream mining note, new assets on a tokenized network. But you flip my thinking to where, I mean, I look at Mexico and the capital markets here where very few people participate in them. In fact, the growth of Bitso as an exchange surpassed the number of account holders in Bitso in 2 years surpassed the number of account holders on the Bolsa, the main stock exchange at that time. And now I'm thinking about it that, you know, part of the holding back of economic growth and opportunity from the majority of residents or citizens in a country is participating in building of wealth. And so if there's a system by which it's easier for them to participate in capital markets, buy stocks, buy part natural resources, buy hash rate, buy whatever, then this could actually really increase the opportunities for wealth accumulation in a broader sense of the word across emerging economies or developing nations. Do I have that correct in your thinking?
Yeah, absolutely.
And it just totally puts it on a different level.
Yeah. I mean, it actually connects with the work from Hernando de Soto. He's a Peruvian economist. I don't know if you're aware of him.
I am.
But this is fascinating. This basically, he says that there are valuable assets in almost any country, just you name it, whatever. There are valuable assets in there. But in many countries, since these institutions have not evolved, what happens is that there is a very informal economy with very particular rules that don't scale. You know, it's rules that they understand very locally. And everybody knows who owns what. Everybody knows how worth this business is or how much that asset is. But since those laws and regulations are very local and they respect each other and they work very locally, they don't translate into connecting to institutions that are, that scale more globally. And therefore, the liquidity doesn't get in. So it doesn't finance growth for those businesses, growth for those communities, and so on. So and he tried a different approach, what he called the other path, But then cypherpunks got in and they built what I think it is the digital path. And there is even an article out there that explains it. And it's a 21-year-old article that I found linked by Szabo himself. And this is about this, what I meant. Both the idea to extend the reach of reputed institutions, global reputed institutions, but also the idea of transforming perhaps a part or partly or partially those informal laws and regulations into code. There is a way to change some of those things, And if that were the case, you would be connecting valuable assets. Like, for example, figures just crossed my head and I can't remember by heart, but, real estate itself, there are no actual land registries trustworthy in many of LATAM countries. I focus on LATAM because I speak Spanish, of course, but I'm talking about many emerging countries out there. And therefore, these people have very valuable assets, but they cannot use it as collateral to finance anything, which is crazy, in my opinion. But also, this happens with mines, it happens with local businesses, it happens with many other things that cannot translate into, let's say, accounting, laws, and, things that a normal investor in a Western country would typically look at in order to make an investment decision.
Maybe let's see, taking a step back just to kind of contextualize why this is such a big deal. The way I'm looking at it, if you look at the U.S., right, the U.S. capital markets, they're by a long leap the largest, most liquid and sizable in the world. And if you ask yourself why that is, I would just in very simple terms say it's mostly because it's an environment where they protect property rights with imperfections, of course. It's not perfect, but you have the environment in the world where property rights are most respected, and then the technology was built on top of that, right? So then you kind of put that in parallel with what Bitcoin is, and you have the Bitcoin protocol, which is I think quite fair to say that's even more of an environment that respects property rights. And now you're starting to see the technology develop on top of that, which is, of course, what Liquid is doing and what you're speaking to. I mean, you know, all these points that you just referenced, Adolfo. And to your point, now you have different assets and jurisdictions around the world where, because of a number of problems locally, they can't really financialize their real assets. So can we maybe get into an example or use case of this precise point?
The most successful use case on Liquid is actually in Mexican promissory notes. And the reason, I mean, I find it fascinating, but basically what happens is that non-banking financial institutions in Mexico, I mean, for starters, in Mexico, promissory notes are very common and frequent a debt instrument, right? If you owe money to Israel and Israel owns a paper signed by you that says, I owe you this much money and with this maturity and you don't pay, Mexican courts will go after you very effectively and very efficiently in a number of weeks, you know, and therefore that provides very strong legal security to the promissory notes. So these assets are extremely valuable, but in paper form, what happened is that these non-banking financial institutions could only use as collateral whenever they were lending money to a Mexican individual or a Mexican company. You know, they wouldn't be using them as collateral unless it was a very large amount, because going after one promissory note after another, you know, and parsing all the information in each one of those notes, it would be extremely, would make it completely crazy expensive, you know, to send them out. Also, it would require armed guards, you know, trucks, very heavily armed people to custody these notes because they are very valuable. So therefore, what happened is that these guys would keep these notes in their balance sheet, but in under custody, but wouldn't do anything with them, even if they were worth millions, you know, many millions. So this fintech company in Mexico, Mifiel, what they did is very interesting, because they have a digital signature solution. So whenever someone is asking one of these non-banking financial institutions for a loan, the solution they would use to sign this document, this loan, would be theirs. So what they did was to add value to this solution was to at the same time issue a token on Liquid. And the token, they embed the ID of the token within a digital version of the promissory note. And therefore, what they did was to basically, one founder sued the other one, you know, one of the founders would own a token, you know, linked to that promissory note, you know, with the amount they owed each other. And funny enough, they sued each other. They went to court. And the court said, okay, since you are the token, you are the legal owner of the actual promissory note, you know? And therefore, they started using this court ruling as backing for this, and the use case started taking off, you know, and they started issuing many, many. We're currently at something like $1.2 billion in promissory notes, and something like 400 million of them are actually being used as collateral by some U.S. banks and some U.S. funds, you know, so they're using those tokens as collateral to lend back. And since they are over-collateralized, it has a very nice risk-reward profile, you know, so, and very nice yields, because even if it is U.S.-denominated, the yields go from something like 10% to 15%, depending on the category of the loan, you know, on whether it's an SME or, you know, an individual or whatever. And so I find it very interesting, because all those valuable assets are locked in there, and all of a sudden you turn them into tokens. You have the reputation of the Mexican courts doing this. That's important. It is an institution that provides strong legal security to these assets, but then you extend its reach with a securing of blockchain, you know? And the reason they chose Liquid is interesting. This is because the U.S. banks and these funds that are investing, they didn't want to have anything to do with a chain having a native token that could be deemed an unregulated security, you know? And that can only happen on Liquid, because it uses Bitcoin and is the only digital commodity that we have certainty at this point, regulatory certainty, let's say. Perhaps at some point they will deem Ethereum a commodity, or I don't know. But the one with the biggest legal certainty at that point was Liquid. And there are many other reasons to choose Liquid, but that was the main one they chose at that time.
Can you just expand upon that a little bit? I mean, our audience may be more familiar with crypto overall than they are how Bitcoin differentiates from that. So we talked about trust previously, and you talked about Bitcoin being, not having a head or not having an organization. Can you just explain a little bit more detail about what differentiates Bitcoin blockchain from other blockchains and why this point that you just made is so important?
Sure. So if you want to replace an institution, you know, like cypherpunks wanted, and you don't want to attract lawyers and you don't want to attract regulators and all that, and you want it to actually, let's say, survive automatically like an automata, you know, the way Bitcoin survives, you need to do what Satoshi did, which is disappearing, you know, vanishing, basically, you know, going off the radar, and nobody knows who even he is, right? And this is a very important point. If you make the whole blockchain trust minimized enough, there are no single points of failure. There are no things that will be breaking. And that's why Bitcoin is security paranoid. The security paranoid feature is simply because if things break, which is something that happens on easier to adopt technologies on other chains, then what will happen is that regulators will come because they have a mandate to protect investors' rights, you know? And therefore, what happens when a smart contract is built on some of these other chains? They break regularly, you know? They have these native tokens that are deemed securities in many cases. There are no, you know, they even have high-level programming languages for smart contracts that are make it, let's say, easier to adopt. But the easier to adopt is basically, in my opinion, a marketing strategy to, you know, to make people get attracted to these chains and to keep building things, you know, to keep the narrative that the native token will be valuable because so many things are going on these chains. But then you realize that the way these chains were built in the first place is by issuing these unregulated securities, raising a lot of money. And then with that money, that's the way they bootstrap the ecosystem, because they pay exchanges, custodians, developers, you know, even, you know, issuers themselves. You know, sometimes I've been speaking to issuers, how much are you going to pay me? And I frequently get messages from custodians and exchanges, and they will be like, are you not going to pay me a grant? You know, I'm not going to pay you a grant. I don't have any money for grants, you know? Either you find Liquid attractive enough to build on it, or, you know, just choose whatever else. But we're not going to pay you to integrate. That's not the way this works. We, you know, we do it the old-fashioned way of trying to provide something that we find valuable in order to solve a problem, that, and then therefore trying to, you know, hopefully you will be ready to pay, willing to pay, because you will find it valuable enough. But the way this industry works is totally upside down. You know, they pre-mined these tokens. The founding team very clearly identified with either a euphemistic foundation or whatever is in there, keeping all the money, and they keep paying these grants yearly. You know, Ethereum Foundation, for example, I recently learned that their budget for this kind of grants is $100 million per year. It's insane. You know, but eventually these people will, in my opinion, run out of money, because these tokens, when people realize that they are actually not solving any problem, they will become more and more worthless compared to Bitcoin. And that money, their budget will start decreasing and therefore will stop being used for any operation. Of course, they are great for things that don't require great security. As I said, Tron is actually great for payments, because it's not secure at all. It's totally centralized, you know? So it enables very fast transactions. But if you want to attract liquidity to a blockchain, you need to have different layers. And that's why we have not only Bitcoin for the main token, the valuable one, the super secure one and decentralized, then Liquid for the financial applications, and then Lightning Network to enable fast and throughput of any of the assets on Liquid, you know? And that's the way we see catering to different trade-offs, to different use cases, by attracting all this liquidity, not only for valuable, high advanced, mature financial applications, but also for payments, you know, and that's it is at least our positioning, you know. But It's funny because most people in the industry don't even know this. You know, they think every chain is competing on the same terms. It's absolutely not. You know, crypto has nothing to do with Bitcoin and with the vision. It is not trust minimized. It's not secure. It's a marketing show to attract people to buy the token, speculating that it's going to become something. Of course, there is a speculation with regards to Bitcoin token, but there is an actual value behind it. And it is what I said before. It's private property without the need for laws. And that is revolutionary. You know, it's something that if you want to enable this trustworthy cooperation on cyberspace, you need this, you know, but you don't need any other token for that. You know, that's my view.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, you spoke earlier to these other blockchains with regards to them being regulatory magnets. I think in a way, you know, Bitcoin is kind of a real value magnet. I mean, once you actually study what it is, how it works, and what it enables, I mean, people come to their different conclusions on, you know, it's a sound commodity, sound money. This is sound property rights, which you just spoke to. Sound technology, which is, you know, what Blockstream and Liquid is specifically focused in. So, you know, I think it's just, it's a slow progress, but it's very solid foundations and sustainable foundations, right? Which are so important for capital markets, because when you're building a product that's going to last, you know, decades, you need to be certain that the regulatory landscape is clear, that the technology is sound, that it's not going to be something that breaks a few years down. So, you know, I love the way you touch on those points, Adolfo. And maybe if we can get into, I know there are some things you maybe, you know, can't speak to, but as far as how you see use cases and applications on top of the Liquid network developing, let's say maybe roadmap in the next, you know, 12, 24 months, where do you kind of see the next steps as far as use cases developing for something like the Liquid network?
Sure. I see the things I'm most excited about are, for example, enabling entire circular economies for the unbanked, you know, in these kind of countries. So imagine them being able to pay with their local stablecoin, but also to save in Bitcoin, but also to have it to exchange for Tether, for example, for USD Tether, and being able to pay in many shops around the country, and even being able to invest, even if in tiny amounts. You know, for me, enabling these people and bank with very little money to be able to save and get a return, even if they invest in tiny things, you know, tiny amounts, you know, I don't mind that. The important part about this is that the fixed structure is so lean compared to the financial markets that require laws and regulations that it is super competitive for the unbanked. And therefore, these people will be able to borrow and to invest and to pay, you know, and make an entire financial living within Liquid. That is very important. But in order to have those assets or where to invest on, then we have this promissory notes use case. Of course, you know, when you're building a network, it is important to become really great, even if it's only in a small number of niches, right? And since we have a head start with regards to promissory notes and a number of others, we are working towards replicating this use case in a number of other Latin American countries that inherit the same legal code as Mexico and Spain, and we inherit it from France, interestingly. So when you have this legal code, it protects the investors of these kind of assets, titles of credit in general, and therefore we have quite a few opportunities there. But then also what I find very interesting is that even if TradFi is only participating very, let's say, testimonially within Liquid, we are connecting these assets with many more investors, you know, in you know, typical wealthy countries like Switzerland or the UK the US, as I told you, there's already a couple of large US banks and a number of funds. But we need to keep growing. And also Kazakhstan and El Salvador are interesting jurisdictions because they are betting on, those lean regulatory bodies that I mentioned. You know, they are very lean, but they are very professional and they are looking in the right direction because they are enabling issuers from their countries and elsewhere to issue those assets and connect them with global liquidity. And So this is the kind of, this is where I think the liquid will be going within the 6 months, but probably 12 or 24 months. And then at the same time, thankfully, we have partners such as Stoker, which do such a great job in creating and structuring these and other products into structures that make it palatable for these the usual TradFi investors, you know, because perhaps these promissory notes would be way too raw in their current format, you know, for them. And then therefore you need to put them into structures that they feel familiar with. But that's the kind of work we're doing. And yeah, I mean, the track record right now is great, and we want to keep momentum.
I think perhaps a lot of our audience would be traditional, familiar only with the TradFi system and the capital market system in the U.S., but having a more global perspective in the work you do in LATAM, what is your vision if you look ahead? How do you think the new capital market structure differs from what we have today? Or what are the biggest benefits or takeaways that you have for this new vision?
I think that the regulators need to see this in a different way, the regulators in the US or the EU. And the reason why I say this is because they're thinking in terms of course, of what happens if things break. Well, then we have all these laws and regulations, and therefore you need to comply with them. But if you want to, let's say, embed software rules within laws and regulations, it for me, it's almost like, how do you say in English, when you round peg in a square hole? That is what I mean. You know, it's like it doesn't work. You know, because software rules and cryptography enable that kind of laws and regulation without them, without the need for them. That's the point. So that's why when I go to attend all these events, I typically listen to TradFi folks and regulators saying, well, yes, we were going to regulate a smart contract. Why should you? You know, the point of a smart contract is doing things autonomously, right? So therefore, if you need to regulate a smart contract, perhaps you're looking at the wrong smart contract because it's one that breaks, right? And therefore, so for me, they're not getting it right. And therefore, that's why I'm not optimistic that TradFi, the way things are right now, is going to take off anytime soon, because the efficiencies that a blockchain will enable for them are, let's say, incremental. They are not a 0-to-1 improvement as they are in emerging countries with these lean regulatory bodies, you know. So in an emerging country like El Salvador, you are basically replacing the need for all the infrastructure, regulations, laws, legal enforcement, you name it, from the EU or the US, with just a blockchain, a secure blockchain. That's it. And a few, of course, regulators that do a great job in order to translate the rights of physical assets into digital assets. That's the translation. That's their job, okay? But that's the only trusted part entity that needs to, let's say, to stay in the equation, so to say. But if your plan is to keep all the, you know, financial infrastructures that are needed in the EU or the US, the improvement is not going to be perceptible. And the liquidity in traditional rails is still way larger than on blockchains. So therefore, whoever wants to issue something will be looking at liquidity first, will not be looking at a blockchain if they are issuing from the EU or the US. So I'm not optimistic about blockchains taking off anytime soon in the EU, you know, but because of this reason. Of course, you know, it will accelerate, it will grow and all that, but I think that it's for a company like ours, it's better to focus. While Stoker and all these partners of ours are still doing products for them, you know, for let's say investors, the intermediaries, that the banks, the large banks, are not looking at this the way I think they should. And therefore, I think that we make a better use of our time by focusing on emerging countries in terms of issuance, having interesting assets on blockchains, and therefore attracting investors from there, you know, on Europe or the US, that will not be working with banks, by the way. You know, they will bypass the need for those banks. So I would love banks to, you know, I've been talking to banks like for the 2 years and a half that I've been at Blockstream, but you know, they are not in the business of, you know, getting rid of the need to trust. They're in the business of knowing who to trust, right? So it's a totally game changer, a paradigm shift. And therefore, it requires some really huge lobotomy, brain lobotomies, to change all this the way it is right now, in my opinion.
Makes absolute sense, and it's going to take time. Like you're speaking to, especially in these very well established and already developed markets. It's just trying to move a beast of a machine, but it's fascinating to hear some of these, kind of hotbeds that you're speaking to, such as El Salvador and Kazakhstan. I wasn't aware of that one, but sorry.
Kazakhstan is amazing. Kazakhstan is doing an amazing job. They have a regulator who is extremely professional, understands the opportunity they have. And I just hope that several other jurisdictions, start thinking along these lines. I don't mean that a lean regulatory body will automatically make you a great reputed institution, right? This is going to take time, as you say. It will require them to build this reputation, this track record. But the more we have, the more global competition we will see, and that's what excites me the most, because I think there is an opportunity for very lean regulatory bodies in very small jurisdictions with the right vision to bypass the need of what the West has been through during more than a century, evolving these institutions. So for me, it's like when African countries bypassed European ones with regards to mobile lines, right? It's exactly the same thing, and so, we'll see what happens.
I don't know if you saw this, but we're recording this on September 16th. And yesterday in the Independence Day speech of El Salvador, President Bukele announced that he was going to aim for fiscal independence, no debt, starting in 2025 budget. I mean, it might take a while for them to achieve that, but the fact that a global leader is actually looking at reducing their debt or eliminating debt instead of increasing it, as in the Western states, is like, it'll be fascinating to see how these microisms of economic success, and even in Argentina, what's happening with taking really strong measures to rein in out of control public spending, will create lessons that hopefully we can all learn from. But I do think that there will be resistance in embedded Western financial systems to make these changes, although I think the tide will turn. So
yeah, and I mean, to that point, Lynn, I mean, you're spot on, because it's, it's a small country, of course, but the fact that a country turned around on so many measures, one of them being what you're speaking to, achieving financial independence at a sovereign level. I mean, I think it's going to be these types of track records and lessons that eventually will have people, just inevitably taking a deeper look into what, what's going on over there. What have they done with regulation? What are they using as a technology, as money? Or it's
capital
luckily,
market.
Yeah, it's luckily a great moment where we're starting to see the early signs of some, pretty successful use cases.
I also see all these trend within a larger trend, which is that if you think about it, all these, many people currently think, the world is going crazy. You don't know what to trust any longer. It is exactly the same problem. It is institutions such as media that are getting global competition through the internet, and therefore you can compare many more things. You can compare the laws. You can even have an opinion and question a court ruling. Who would have thought that, and therefore you hear all these different opinions and you don't know who, if you should be trusting your court ruling any longer, right? And therefore, what you see is that the internet is polarizing us. It's basically making all these institutions compete with each other. And what we need is to what the institutions enabled in the past, which is converging on reaching consensus on what the truth is, and that's what a blockchain does in a nutshell, right? And that's why I think it's revolutionary to understand it from this perspective. But yeah, of course, it will be a struggle at some point, but it is worth the fight.
And just going back to something you said a little while ago that I wanted to highlight, because I think it is important, just giving opportunities for the unbanked or underbanked in the world. Our first guest on our podcast was Samson Mao, and with the Liquid Wallet, which I love, and I recommend that wallet to anybody I'm trying to onboard into Bitcoin, but it has a very clear screen. I mean, it allows exchanges from stable coins, which many of the individuals in emerging countries need to use, and a savings mechanism, but in sats and tiny amounts. So by opening up these opportunities for capital accumulation at whatever level is just a game changer in the whole mindset of accumulating wealth and providing opportunities for improving your financial situation. So, you know, we're talking at the big level of remaking capital markets, but also at the ground level of really empowering individuals to participate in this new financial system at whatever level they're able to, which up until now, the roadblock was the amount of money that you could put in and the costs for transactions. And Bitcoin blockchain does away with those costs of facilitating the transactions. So that's an important point, I think, is...
Totally. Aqua has made a great job, and it's solving great problems. And also they have made something very important, which is, you know, basically liquid is in the background. You don't even know what you're using. And therefore, you're using Bitcoin, but you're in fact using a liquid, and it's just more scalable. And whenever you want your Bitcoin back, you just peg out. Well, they do it for you. And so that's the way to go, in my opinion. You know, from the UX perspective, making it just easier. And they have done a tremendous job, indeed.
We'd love to continue, you know, doing some check-ins with the Liquid Network as things progress, because I think it is going to be one of the, it's proving out to be one of the most important infrastructures for what Bitcoin scalability can enable, you know, in financial markets. We appreciate you coming onto the podcast, and you know, maybe anything to add or to wrap up on?
No, just thank you very much for the opportunity. I love talking about what we're doing. I think we have great projects, and absolutely count on me if you want to touch back on it, and happy to be here.
And we're going to put links to the articles. I also have an article that you wrote that details the case study that you mentioned in Mexico and the one about trust, which is a more recent article. But you mentioned that when you're speaking, so most of our guests speak in Bitcoin conferences and things like this, but are you speaking at any TradFi conferences or coming up soon? Or
Interestingly, I got invited to one in Barcelona in a few weeks. It is a very TradFi event, so I'm looking forward to that, because Bitcoin-only people have very few chances of doing so. I'll be speaking in Lugano as well and in Prague. And yes, I've been invited to a few others, but yeah, it's I hope that we you know, we are able to explain the what liquid. I mean, when I joined Bitcoin, for me, of course, it was Bitcoin only, and I had enough with learning Bitcoin. But now that I'm into liquid, I hope that Bitcoiners get to understand that you cannot only change the world by replacing an entire institution. You can actually extend the reach of existing ones and have a great impact, like Tether is doing, right? And therefore, I hope that more Bitcoiners keep joining us, and they don't wait until the fees get very high to come, you know, because that's what typically happens. But I'm looking forward to keep the conversation going.
And where can people get in touch with you, Adolfo?
I'm typically either in the Bolt community, the Build on Liquid community, Build on Bolt 2, also LinkedIn. In Twitter, I stopped visiting because it was way too addictive for me. But I was in the past, but I deleted my account, basically. But yeah, on LinkedIn, I'm very active, and also on the Bolt 2 community and the Blockstream blog, of course.
Excellent. Well, thanks again, Adolfo, and, until next time.
Thank you very much, guys.